outrageous, but my goal is literally to change the collective consciousness.
There is nothing outrageous about that. I love it.
Thank you. You know, I just said some negative self-talk, didn't I?
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes that we are exploring together. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Today's interview was a lot of fun. It actually made me just a slight bit nervous because while we have a platform that's about communication, I invited on a guest who is an expert in communication. She opened by describing that her interest in this field came about in really wanting to understand the neurological implications of how we speak to one another. Yes, that's exactly why I was nervous. What is the influence of our intonation? How do we position words? How do we shift our relationships with other people and the world outside ourselves based on how we communicate? Mary Shores is the author of Conscious Communications, and she has been working as a CEO and serious badass for the last 20 years, teaching people how to harness the power of the words to change their mind and the minds of people around them. This was a super fascinating conversation because all of us are in a position of influence. All of us are out there trying to change the world on a daily basis. And if we don't have our words to back us up, it makes our job that much more difficult. This was a fascinating conversation, and it is my pleasure to share with you Mary Shores. Mary Shores, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you. I am so excited and happy to meet you today.
Well, I am really excited to get into this conversation because it's an area that I don't think, ironically, we talk about sufficiently. And that's this idea of conscious communication, which also happens to be the name of your book. Can you share with us a little bit about your journey and story and how you really developed an interest and curiosity in the power of communication?
You know, I think that my original spark of curiosity was with the power of words. And it was way back when I was probably 20 and I had a telephone sales job. So I would notice how certain words or certain tonalities would increase like my success. And so I was really, you know, thinking like, where did this spark begin? And I think I understood the power of words first from that. And then over time and over like years of my obsession with personal development, with professional development, spiritual growth, as well as having a child on the spectrum led me to this path of exploring neurology. And that's when it solidified.
So talk to us a little bit about your process. Like, what is it that you take people through in terms of helping them to understand how all of these things influence their capacity to be received?
So the process for conscious communications, and I love that you call it you're Canadian. I love how you guys say process. It's like a book and a process all in one, because the book has coaching exercises at the end of every chapter. And the exercises are designed to build on top of one another. So like the first exercise builds you up for later exercises in the book. And so they're all very simple to do, but you know, it takes discipline to make them a daily practice. And so the basics are, you know, we want to eliminate the use of negative words. We want to really replace, we want to like be conscious about what we're replacing them with. And then we want to understand how our choices are building our lives around us like Legos.
So what exactly is a negative word?
I am like really excited that you asked me that because negative words are my passion.
Perfect.
So negative words are, in fact, words that imply negativity. And there is a basic list, which is no, not, can't, won't, however, and unfortunately. Those are the basics. Now, there's other things you can add to that. And in some situations, however, or unfortunately, could be, they could have an empathetic tone, but not really.
Okay, duly noted.
Okay, so like that one's, I know it's on the cusp, but like seriously, it's better to get rid of those. Because when do you ever hear good news after you hear, unfortunately?
Yeah, as you're saying that, that's true. Unfortunately, yeah. I used that in two emails this morning, but I appreciate that my tactics are going to change moving forward.
So here's what you can, I'll give you a quick tip. Here's what you can replace unfortunately with. Are you ready?
I'm all ears.
Okay. It's what I can do for you is. Because what you want to do in a business situation is you always want to be telling people what you can do instead of what you can't do.
Sure.
And so, yeah. Anyway, all right. I'll move on here.
I like it though. So, that's like improv, right? That's like the idea that when you say no, you shut it all down. And when you just say yes, then you always create an option for more. I want to get back to negative words, but I also want to, I'm going to interject a question there. And that is, how do we say no when it is appropriately respecting our boundaries, where we're not shutting things down emotionally?
So my trick is, and this is in a communication strategy that I developed called Words That Work, which is, there's a little bit of about this in the book, but it's actually, I'm writing an entire book about this now called The Communication Code. And there's a trick, and it's like, how do you say no without saying no? And I love that you brought boundaries in. So what you need to do is you need to, like, okay, first of all, there are going to be situations, especially if it's with an abuser, a narcissist, you know, so like we have to take into consideration that the person you're communicating with is healthy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't establish our own boundaries and it's because of ourselves and not because of the other person, right?
Fair enough.
Okay. So what you do is you just say like what you are willing to do.
Yeah. Sort of the same as unfortunately.
It is, but like, again, you know, this method was really developed in business. So if this were like, say I'm your friend and I say, hey, Megan, can you like do me this favor and run, you know, this errand for me, whatever it is, and you just can't. Well, that's really fine to say no.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not your responsibility to run that errand. If you can run it, that's great. So like, just for clarity that the communication strategy, you can use it in your personal life, but like we have to not take anything to extremes, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I totally appreciate that. There's a balance between the two. And I like the way that you've contextualized this and you've just shifted it slightly, right? I mean, and sometimes it's as simple as saying, what I can do for you is connect you with my assistant who will provide you with X, Y, and Z. And that's a really delicate no, I think, as well.
Yeah. And so in business, it's really easy to use this because you're always focused on the solution more than you're focused on the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the introduction to your book was written for January. You know, it starts by describing the disconnect between where people are and where they want to be. How can people really harness the power of your teaching as they embark on the goals and resolutions for the new year?
So I really believe, and I feel this like right down to my cellular level, that 2018 is going to be a massive year of unconditional love, prosperity, and security. And the way to get there is through gratitude. So unconditional love is the most important step to empowerment. And to get there, it is as simple as being grateful for your own gifts. And chapter one in the book is called Cultivating Positive Focus. And the exercise is to set up a gratitude practice. And so, like, I'm thinking in terms of, like, how can we even supercharge this power of gratitude is to understand to be grateful for your gifts. And when I say gifts, I'm talking about the things that you are naturally good at, your gifts, your talents that you were born with, your skill sets. Because the more you're grateful for those skill sets, the more those will grow, and they're going to become the foundation of your greater prosperity.
Yeah, I love that. And gratitude is the foundation, I find, for confidence as well. Like, when we're really focused on what we're grateful for, it always gives us that elevation.
Yes. And you can be grateful for, you can be grateful for your natural confidence.
How do you get people to be grateful? And I know this probably sounds like a really ridiculous question, but I know even I have some patients and I'll sit across them and be like, what are you grateful for? And they'll look at me and be like, nothing. Like, is there an exercise? Is there like a process that people can go through where it just taps them into that?
So the workaround, because sometimes people have a hard time responding to a direct question, like, what are you grateful for? Because especially if, you know, this is all about the way our brains perceive our world, right? And the first thing that I like to explain is, you know, I don't look at gratitude as some sort of divine duty that I owe, like a debt of gratitude to a God in the sky. You know, like, I was sort of taught that as a child, growing up in a not an extreme religious faith, but just like general, you know, Lutheran faith, I was taught to be grateful. And I always resisted that, like it was some sort of chore, you know what I mean?
Right.
But when I understand the neurology behind it and that a practice of gratitude actually builds the neural networks in your brain to support your perception of things that are good around you, and then that perception in turn feeds your brain with more serotonin and dopamine, and it becomes this feedback cycle to where you get happier and happier. So that's like the why. But like, here's the workaround. What you can do is you can ask the person, what is the last major milestone in your life? So, you know, especially like we've just rounded out 2017. What were the major milestones for 2017? And they can probably answer that question better than they can answer what they're grateful for.
Yeah, it's a great way to kind of reposition it.
Right. And then you can turn that into, well, that sounds really amazing, and it must have created a lot of momentum in your life. So, you know, are you grateful for that milestone?
I like that. And so if we're talking about achievement and we're talking about getting people into that zone of gratitude, on the same vein of achievement and then drawing back where we were talking about before, what's the role of negative self-talk on our capacity to achieve? Because now we've integrated this notion of gratitude will actually trigger positive neuronal pathways.
Yes.
What is happening on a neurological basis when we engage in negative self-talk?
So first, I want to explain that we actually have what's called negativity bias. Have you ever heard of that?
Totally.
Okay. So we're wired toward negativity because, like, evolutionarily wise, there is a purpose to that. Because back in the day, you know, before we had civilizations, we really needed to be hypervigilant about dangers in our environment, like saber-toothed tigers, or I don't know, like falling off a cliff or something. But with those things don't exist today, but our programming and our instinctual processes are still wired towards this negativity bias. So the first thing I want to say to people is, like, forgive yourself, because we're sort of in the middle of this positivity movement. Mm-hmm. And it can make us actually feel guilty if we're not positive all the time, right? I'm like,
truth.
I can't be positive every moment of every day. Okay, but like back to the negative self-talk. So in a sense, when we are participating in complaining, judgment, negative self-talk or any kind, what we are doing is we are reinforcing those neural pathways, because it all really does boil down to your subconscious programming. And so you know, you're not even sometimes aware of it when you're doing it. Like, for example, one of mine that I caught myself with eventually after like 10 years of doing it is I would always say, I want to write a book, but I'm not a writer. And the thing is that words are like a mirror. So negative self-talk, words are a mirror to your subconscious, and it's revealing to you your belief system. So somewhere along the lines, it's like when you see, when you hear me say, I want to be a writer, it's like you can see that written on my soul, like it's a purpose in this life to write a book. But on the other hand, when I back that up with the, but I'm not a writer, that is revealing a belief system that somewhere in my past, I did not truly believe that I possessed the certain skill set to achieve that goal. And so that needed to get fixed before anything was going to move. So when you talk about achievement, you can only achieve to the level of what you believe is possible.
So is there truth to affirmations then?
I believe so.
Yeah, I just hear such mixed reviews on them.
And rightly so, because you know what? I am the skeptic of all things until I understand the science behind it, which is why like conscious communications is a perfect blend of like science and spirituality. But everything, every suggestion in the book is backed up by scientific research, specifically in the study of neurology. So affirmations work because they also create neural pathways in your subconscious, like the same way that hypnosis would. Okay, so here is where you get the mixed reviews, because people are forced into a situation where they're told to like affirm that they're a millionaire when they're like in debt.
Right.
And so here's like, let's say you have two camps of people. Like you've got the A camp and the B camp. And the A camp, they're like more flexible in how they think about affirmations. So they actually feel good to say they're a millionaire, even when they're not. Right? But then you've got Camp B, and this is me. I'm Camp B. I don't want to say I'm a millionaire if I'm not, because you know why? Because I feel incongruent with my truth.
Right.
And when I feel incongruent with my truth, what is happening is I'm actually reinforcing the negative neural pathway, and I am not doing anything for myself. So those people that can, what is the saying? Say it as if it's true. Good for them. But also for the rest of us who are not like, we feel resistant. So if you say an affirmation and you feel resistant, you need to back it up and you need to create an affirmation that matches where you're at in your journey right now. So the way that you do that is, I'll give you an example. I was at a yoga retreat recently and I just said, does anyone want an affirmation? And a woman came up and she goes, well, I'm a clothing designer. She said, but I am hesitant to use the clothing design to say I am a clothing designer or I am a, you know, famous clothing designer. She said because she didn't have the exact schooling. So it was something to do with her level of education, but she'd been doing this job like her whole life. And I said, well, can you say as an affirmation? And she made clothing specifically for like pregnant women. And I said, can you say as an affirmation that I make moms to be beautiful with my clothing or something along those lines? And her face lit up like a Christmas tree. And she was like, yes, I can say that, because your affirmation needs to match what you believe to be true, or else your mind will put it in the shredder.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful way of repositioning that truth for people.
Right. So like, let's say for example, that you are looking for clients. So rather than say like, I have the best clients in the world, you can say opportunities come to me every day. Or my favorite one, actually, because I like to keep mine simple. My favorite one right now is like, something amazing is going to happen today. And that's it. Something amazing is going to happen today.
Yeah, I'll take that.
It's so easy.
I'm going to borrow that, Mary Shores. Thank you.
Yeah. Or I am always at the right place at the right time. Like those I can sink my teeth into, and they make the corners of my mouth turn up a little bit.
Well, and they're powerful. Like there's just an inherent power to those beliefs.
Right.
I know from your writing and some of the things that you've described that you're a really strong advocate for journaling. Why do you believe this is such an important tool? Does it help to reinforce some of these pathways?
So I think that journaling is powerful because it can be turned into a daily practice. And whenever you're doing a daily practice of anything, you are going to make changes in your brain. So journaling is a great way to answer questions. So like, for example, one of my assistants told me today that we have enough gratitude prompts to create a 365-day gratitude journal. Like, how awesome is that? Where you just like answer the gratitude question of the day.
That's really cool.
And then over 1 year, if you did it, even if you didn't do it for a whole year, but if you did it for like a season, because I always say like your daily practice takes a season to really cultivate transformation. Like we're always looking for this instant transformation, like go to a weekend workshop and have a transformation. But the truth is that, and by the way, I was the poster child of the person who did that. Like I would show up at every weekend event and I was like the weekend workshop warrior. But true transformation happens in small pivots over time. And the reason I say it takes a season is because like if you're a farmer and you plant a seed, then it's not going to be until the end of the season that you see that growth. And that's just such a great analogy for the human brain, because when you start a daily practice, it's like you've planted a seed. And then over time, over a season, you are feeding that seed by creating the seed is the beginning of a new neural pathway. And you're creating the synapse to make the connections to the neurons in your subconscious.
Yeah. And I see this in practice all the time where we've been in essence trained by a medical system that rewards instant gratification. So you have a headache and you take a Tylenol and it's gone, or you have an injury, you go to the emergency department, they take your pain away and they fix the problem. Like we really are very rarely given the opportunity to see the power of the human body or the human brain truly transformative when you give it the right information. And I think that's, I mean, you're talking about the same thing. Like we just have to be patient with our bodies, and they're really quite intelligent.
They are. I've been hearing that word lately, the innate. I'm like fascinated with this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, if we're looking at negative self-talk, we're looking at establishing these pathways. And I know you mentioned being a parent, but I've got three young kids. I'm always fascinated in tools that I can use in communicating with them to help to set them up from a foundational perspective in terms of how they're thinking or their thought processes. Are there tools that you use in your own life to really reinforce this?
You know, yes. And I just want to preface this by saying that I am a single mom. I have two children. They're both teenage boys. One is 16 and one is 17. And my motherhood journey has been quite a struggle because I am a single parent of a special needs child. And so there has been a lot of obstacles in my way. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of people in my situation. So I just want to say first, like, if you are in my situation and you have a child on the spectrum or you have a child with a special need of any kind, one of the biggest lessons I had to learn was dropping expectations. Like, it took me a long time to drop the expectation that my son was going to be like the football star, even though he's 6'5".
Right. You know?
Like, he's the Rubik's Cube star. He's not the football star.
Right.
So that's one thing. But I also like just believe in teaching them how to think is so much more important than expecting them to be maybe the perfect student in school. Because kids that are naturally good students are the ones that really enjoy like turning their homework in and, you know, getting A's and B's. But, you know, I think that history has shown that sometimes it's the entrepreneurial students who are the B, C, D students. And like, let's not make that inherently wrong. Let's like the same thing. Let's be grateful for whatever their gifts are and then cultivate those gifts for them.
we create all sorts of systems that evaluate people's success. And I think we need to start to question the system sometimes as opposed to the people. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yes, that's brilliant. And, you know, like as a mother of a child on the spectrum, I really appreciate that kind of attitude because I think that I would like to see that transition in our education where we treat students as individuals and not try to put them in a box where everyone's, you know, doing. I understand the reason for it organizationally, like logistically, it has to work that way. But I think that there's a way it could change. I don't have the answers, but I'm hopeful for it when it does.
And with so many adults being the product of an education system that, you know, I think for the most part across North America is fairly outdated. There's pockets where things are transitioning. Do you see like some commonalities in terms of communication styles in adults that just make you cringe? Like if there's sort of like three or four things that you're like, oh yeah, I see this all the time. And if people could just correct it, it would be amazing. So we talked about negative self-talk, but are there other little things that we do that you'd love for us to change?
Well, as adults?
Yeah.
You know, I see people get really upset politically. And I think that that's a waste of energy. Like, for example, if you're getting, it's still like a point of gratitude, because if so many people don't like the president or don't like policy, believe it or not, you need the worst person in the position of power, because that's what's going to inspire the people to rise up and make change.
There's always a silver lining. Yes.
Right. And then I would also say, and this is something that I'm working on for next month, but like, challenge yourself to go on a complaint diet. Because complaining is going to reinforce the negative neural pathways. So like really, you know, when you start paying attention to how much you complain, it's a little bit shocking, but then don't judge yourself. Like, you know, forgive yourself for it and move on and just be grateful that you like recognized that you were in fact complaining.
Yeah, it's a good point. We're doing a challenge right now. We do a thing twice a year called the 6 and 6. So there's 6 lifestyle challenges that we put out over a 6-week period. And this week was all about sugar. But if we hadn't already predetermined what we're going to do, I think having a week where we just drop judgment across the board and drop complaining, what a powerful thing. The feedback we're getting with everyone with respect to sugar is, wow, I had no idea how much I was dependent on this or how much I ate it to feel good. And I think people complain sometimes because it's a quick win. It's like eating a bag of chips. It makes you feel good in the moment. And then it does not have any long-term benefit for you.
Well, and don't we use it as a way of connecting with other people?
Absolutely. Politics, the weather, it doesn't matter what it is. It's never, it is, it's true. It's true. At the end of the day, we can always find something to complain about with somebody else.
We certainly can. And you know, I think the opposite of complaining is gratitude.
Yeah, I know. It's funny how we're always so full circle, right?
That's right.
Let's look a little bit, because I know your area of expertise is really in looking at the business side of things. So language and leadership, I'm really interested in this concept as both personal individual leaders, but also in tools that we can give people in positions or leadership. Are there things that leaders need to keep in mind in terms of how they are communicating to a team? Are there actual words or intonations or things that they need to be including or should be more mindful of in their communication?
I think there's so many things that I could probably teach an entire workshop on it. And actually, now that I say that, I have taught workshops on it called Leadership Essentials. So I would say, like, here's some basics. If you have a small business, a small practice, think about guidelines, expectations, and level of authority. And if I could take that further, it's like guidelines means make sure that the staff has documented instructions on what they're supposed to be doing. Because if you train someone, then, and you don't have it step by step written down, then when that person leaves and comes, and then here comes the next person, but let's say it's been 5 years since you did that job and things have changed and Judy didn't make notes of all the things that were changed, then when the new person comes in, you're a little bit lost. And you're setting that person up for failure. So guidelines is like making sure that they understand what they're supposed to do inside, outside, backwards, and forwards. And in my office, you know, we have this term, we call it mastery. So we don't move on. We don't consider them trained until they have mastered a process. The second one is expectation, because I feel like, these are all based on mistakes I've made, by the way.
The best teachers. So,
after like 20 years as a CEO, these are some things I've learned by failure. And setting expectations is so important, because when people don't really know what the expectation is, then their tendency might be to like put way more energy into it than you wanted. Like my big joke on this is last year, the Christmas picture. So the Christmas picture task was given to a new employee. And of course she wanted the biggest, most amazing Christmas picture in the history of Christmas pictures, right? And I walked in the door and Megan, I kid you not, my entire office was transformed into a winter wonderland. No one was working. No one was answering the phone. And everyone was just like making crafty projects like we were in kindergarten. And oh my gosh, like it was not a good moment for me, but it was such a great teaching moment, because sometimes we think about the word expectations and it's like kind of goal setting thing. But like, what about when you don't set an expectation and then the person spends too much time and energy on it?
Right, right.
And then the last one is level of authority. Like people really need to, you need to communicate what someone's level of authority is, because, you know, you could call it boundaries, but if people don't know where that line is, then it's going to affect your employees' ability to make decisions. Because they may not know what things they need to get approval for or what things they could just decide on their own.
Yeah, I've learned that lesson a fair bit myself. The concept of setting appropriate expectations is just such a key element of effective communication.
It really is.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. One area I'd really love to, I hate this term, but it just came to mind, pick your brain on, but if you've got a better one, I'm open to it, is a little bit of your journey as an author. We have an audience of entrepreneurs and people who have very strong visions for their capacity to contribute in the world. How did you transition from being a communication specialist in terms of speaking to businesses to really putting this together and compiling it into a book that's accessible on a different level? Was it a different set of communication skills, or did you really just transfer your thinking into the written word?
Yes, all of those things. So the first part is, you know, I really had to believe that it was possible, because as I shared earlier in the show, you know, I had this affirmation or this mantra that I want to write a book, but I'm not a writer. And anyone out there who wants to write a book, let me just assure you, there's a reason you feel that way. You don't just, you know,
feels that way. Yeah.
Right. The majority of the population doesn't go around thinking that there's a book inside of them. Right. But people who want to write a book, there's a reason for that. And you should pursue that. My first step was I really needed to invest in myself. So if I was going to change that belief system and know that it was possible, like take it more from just an idea in my head, but to actually have like a book in my hand, was I needed to invest in myself. And I did that by attending writers' workshops. So I'm teaching one right now, which if any of your listeners are available, there'll be a version of that. It's called the Aspiring Authors Online Workshop. And you can find that on my website, maryshores.com. But you need to I had to learn a little bit about the book business, because that was different than the industry that I was in before. So I took the steps to invest in myself, and then I created, I really understood how to do it. Like, what are the action steps? Because like, if I could do this over again, one thing that I would say is that I was missing is I wish I'd had a person there to sort of hold my hand and just get me started. Because I didn't understand simple things like, in order to get traditionally published with a publisher, that you need to turn in a book proposal. Like, I had this picture in my mind that people just sat down at some like old fashioned typewriter or a clipboard or something and, you know, had a pencil sticking in their ear, and they would just like start with word one and, you know, write
just
an entire book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let me tell you something, that is no way close to the reality of the situation. So I've created things like a chapter planner that I give away to people for free. You know, the other part is I had zero understanding about the massive amount of social media that it takes if you want to be traditionally published. I think another thing is to really understand the difference between traditional publishing and self-publishing. So like, for example, the way to really figure out which one you want, because there's drawbacks and benefits to both, but the way to figure out which one is right for you is to get absolutely laser focused on the reason why you're writing the book. So if you're writing the book because you have a practice, like you have a business and you want to establish yourself as an expert, then it may not be the best decision for you to go the traditional publishing route, because that's going to take a very, very long time. And it's going to also put you in a position where in order to get a book deal, you're going to have need a large social media following. And I mean like in the tens of thousands. Versus self-publishing, you don't need that at all. But if you, like me, I don't have a coaching practice, I don't have anything like that. And my goal was, like, this is going to sound kind of outrageous, but my goal is literally to change the collective consciousness.
There is nothing outrageous about that. I love it.
Thank you. You know, I just said some negative self-talk, didn't I?
I gotcha.
I have this amazing life purpose to make a dent in the collective consciousness of the world. And so because that was my goal, traditional publishing was perfect for me. But I assure you, if I had not gotten that book deal with Hay House, I would have self-published, no doubt.
Yeah, I think you're bang on there when you say, what's your end game? Like, what are you really after? Because I think a lot of people are like, I just kind of want to write a book. I'm like, then write the book. Like, well, just get it. Just publish it yourself.
That's right. And like, do a little bit to invest, you know, invest in yourself, like learn what it takes so that you don't waste a lot of time doing it the wrong way.
Yes, I agree. I have enough friends now who are authors who have said exactly what you say. It's not what you think it is. It's not like you just described. You just sit down and you're going to write, you know, 100,000 words, and then you're going to find a publisher. Like, there is a process. This is a big business. It's a sophisticated business, and it requires a level of sophistication for engagement.
That's so brilliant. That's so true. And I am like, you know, publishing this book has been my biggest dream in life come true. And it became a bestseller within 6 weeks. And I've just had, my life has been in such a transition period because of it. And I am just like, I'm so grateful. It's hard to even put it into words.
I love hearing that. Mary, I have a sneaking suspicion that my audience is going to get to hear a little bit more from you this year and all that you are up to. I want to circle back because you talked about your very big vision for the world. What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I definitely want to expand people's mindset and their consciousness and, you know, really just be a piece of that puzzle that people need to construct their lives in the way that they want, instead of constantly flowing in the chaos of circumstances and stress.
It's beautiful. And so segueing from there, how would you describe health?
You know, health is an interesting one. And my, like, first of all, I am blessed that at 44 years old, I'm not on any prescriptions. I'm at a decent weight, but you know, I have had some health issues. They've been more structural. And what I've learned by that is actually a book I'm thinking about writing. I'm calling it Unraveled. And it's all this importance of holistic medicine and how, like, we don't understand the massive impact that stress has on our life over time. And so what I would say is, like, anyway, my story has a good ending, by the way, but like, I had some spinal structural issues that I had to correct to straighten my spine. But as I was doing that, you know, I also had to be prepared for all of the emotional tragedies that had happened to sort of curve my spine in the first place, that when you go to heal it, that's all going to come out like a pinata. And I'm sort of like smack in the middle of understanding that, and I want to explore it more. But that brings into like how important acupuncture is, how important massage therapy is. You know, yoga, you have to do things to remove the damage to your body. And so what I would say is, what health means to me is getting yourself into balance and alignment so that your body can do what it has been made to be able to do on its own.
You're speaking my language.
I am. That makes me so happy.
I love it. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. Mary, this is a really great place to make a transition. In the second part of our interview, we look at something called KPIs. So just like we have KPIs in our business, I believe that we have key performance indicators with respect to how we live our life. So I've got six rapid fire questions for you, if you'll indulge me for just a moment.
Okay, let's do it.
You ready? Okay. Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
My consistent morning routine is coffee.
Love
from
it.
Coffee from the coffee shop. So I get up and literally in my pajamas, drive up to the coffee shop at 6:30 in the morning. And that is the one thing that is consistent. From there, you know, like I've got kids, so I get them up and ready. And then I usually go back into my room and veg out and write. And that's kind of like my best creative idea time.
Yeah, there's something special about the morning, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, your brain has just slept all night, you know. Sometimes you have things come to you in a dream that, and I just sort of like give myself that space to ponder.
Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Nonfiction, always.
I'm on a quest to find a guest who reads fiction, but that's an aside. What are you reading right now?
I could probably help you find that guest. I'm usually reading multiple things at once, as I'm sure a lot of people are. So right now I am reading Feeding My Spiritual Side with a book called The Book of Knowing and Work.
What should I make?
Oops. And I just pushed it as I looked at it. And I'm also reading Captivate, the Science of Likeability by Vanessa Van Edwards.
Yeah, I've looked at that book a few times. I think it's sitting in my Audible list right now.
I really like it. And you know what? I'll tell you what. When I said before, one of my affirmations is I'm always at the right place at the right time. That also works for information. Like information always comes to me at the right place at the right time. So I was actually on the airplane flying out to give a huge Hay House speech. And I listened to that book on the way. And there was actually a chapter where she had studied or someone had studied like the successful TED Talks and like what were the attributes to the speakers. And I was able to take that. And 2 days later, when I was on the stage, I was able to do everything that she suggested and it worked.
It's so brilliant. You just have to be open, everyone. It's just in front of you. What is one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Oh, with respect to health. Well, I suppose gratitude probably doesn't count. I will say I am most consistent with keeping up going to the chiropractor. I wish I could say it was water, but it's not.
No, you know what? We do really well with the truth here at the Anthropology Podcast. So that's really awesome. What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Oh my gosh. Like I am a badass. I mean, like
yes.
That word, if you look that up in the dictionary, I think my picture should be there. I'm just a person that continues to triumph no matter what. I mean, I was on my own at 16. I started my own company at 24. But I'm also this person who wants to kick open that door of opportunity, but not just for myself, but hold it open and let as many people run through it as possible. Because like the more you can innovate yourself and others, the more that just like our human evolution is going to move forward.
Brilliant. What do you do for fun or play, Mary?
Well, I love to go on weekend workshop retreats. So I love to, you know what, this is so basic, but I love to go to the movies because I love to escape. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I love to be a nerd. So I love to study. I love watching documentaries, but I like going to the movies and I like going to retreats and workshops, whether they be for business or whether they be for personal. And you always meet like-minded people. You connect with them. You can stay connected with them through the world of social media. And it really enriches my life.
So well put. My last question for you, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
You know, I think it's both. I was born this way and there's nothing you could tell me that would make me believe otherwise. I recently just watched an entire series on the History Channel called The Men Who Built America. And it was fascinating looking at the lives of like John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, and a lot of those people who became the richest men in the world and who actually built the infrastructure of the entire nation, they came from all different backgrounds. Like it wasn't, not all of them came from like destitute poverty. Some of them didn't. And so I think it's born in you, but I also think that if you're in an environment that from a young child, like your parents are entrepreneurs, then it just makes sense that you would grow up with those tendencies.
Yeah, it tends to be easier when you have something to model.
Yes.
Mary, it has been such a pleasure having you on the podcast today. I know people are going to want to follow up with you, learn more about your book. Where can we send them so they can find out about more about what you're up to?
Oh, thanks for asking. Well, my website is the easiest thing, obviously, to give out, maryshores.com. Shores is S-H-O-R-E-S. You can find me all over social media. And I would like to invite all of your listeners to join my Facebook group, which is called Fearless Ambition. And what's great about Fearless Ambition is anytime I have a new offering, we post it in that group. And the people in that group, you know, we do daily prompts. We just, it's a lot of fun and like-minded people. But for your audience, we're just finishing this up and it'll be ready by the time the show airs. I've got a New Year, New You workbook challenge that all of you can have for free. So we'll give you the link, but we'll also make sure it's on our website as well.
Incredible. And we'll hook everybody up with all of these links in our show notes. Mary, thank you so much for taking the time. I learned so much. I love my podcast because it feels like this little selfish endeavor, but this was really awesome. Thanks so much for being here.
And Megan, I should probably mention this, but if anyone would like to check out my book or even just read the description, you can find it on whatever is your Amazon link, like whether it's Amazon, you know, Canada or Amazon US, just it's on there, it's available. And just check out the description, see if it resonates.
Yeah. And your book, Conscious Communications, I love how you have on Twitter, the Rosetta Stone of Manifestation. I cannot wait to delve into it even more. Thanks so much, Mary.
Thanks, Megan.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.